Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the snap. Here's the toss to Mixon running right across the 50, 45. Tackled by Cross at the 41. Checkmate. That'll do it. The Texans will beat the Colts on opening day. Stroud takes a knee, and it is over. The Texans win on opening day, knocking off the Colts on the road, 29-27, 1-0, with the Bears up next on Sunday Night Football.
Hell yeah. Mark Vandermeer on the call, 29-27, the final score. And, man, we got a lot to dig into today. A victorious Reaction Monday here on Sports Radio 610, in which the Texans are the only 1-0 team in the AFC South. Welcome in on a Reaction Monday, everybody. Good to be with you. Great to be with you. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. And Seth, this is a beautiful day, man.
This is a great day. And honestly, the way that game unfolded and the way everything happened, the way they came by their victory, I couldn't be happier about the fact that it looks like the Texans have a genuine 1-2 punch now. They can beat you through the air. They can beat you on the ground. If a team decides, all right, look, we got to just try to limit this passing attack because it's so potentially lethal, then that's going to end up with 213 yards rushing by the Texans. That they're very capable with Damian Pierce averaged over 5 yards per carry on 3 carries. Your second leading rusher was Tank Dell. Stephon Diggs got in on the rush game as well. So all of that is awesome. But then I also do like that it was sloppier than a lot of us, including C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans, would prefer. I feel like it's the perfect reminder of a good scare. A good scare to put in of, like, hey, man, we got to clean this stuff up. You can't be abandoning your cornerbacks in deep coverage, yep, in quarters coverage. You got to, as an offense... The only guy that looked really, really in sync and ready that's returned is Laremy Tunsil with his 2 false starts.
He's committed to his gimmick. Yeah,
he's right back. Yeah, Laremy Tunsil committing penalties. But otherwise, I mean, we'll get into this a little bit later. Like, Laremy, I've been talking a lot of smack on behalf of Laremy and how well he'd do against Leatu Latu, the rookie of the Colts.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. Latu had some nice snaps versus Tunsil.
Okay, so he's going to be a problem. Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Some nice snaps.
We're going to dig into this thing because it was a really compelling 3 hours, and obviously won the Texans. They win. They're 1-0. That's the big thing. They get the season started off right. 3 straight times they beat the Colts there. Now 9 straight road games in the AFC South that they've won, so all those streaks are still alive. CJ still hasn't thrown an interception in a divisional game yet, although it was close a couple of times with CJ. To me, Seth, the biggest thing, kind of playing off of what you just talked about with them being able to beat you multiple ways now, is that they didn't just run the football. They ran it well. Obviously, Joe Mixon, 30 carries, a buck 59. He averaged well over 5 yards per carry. But the fact that they ran it in the 2 instances that you have talked about and I have talked about, that are independent of the statistics, independent of averaging X amount of yards per carry, or independent of being a top 10 rushing team, they were able to move the ball and score touchdowns when they got in the red zone, in no small part because they actually have a threat running the football now. I know Diggs got 2 of those in there, but, you know, 2 short touchdowns. Mixon got the other one. But they were able to move the football in the red zone in part because of the rushing attack. And the biggest thing, that play that we heard at the very end, when they needed to burn 3.5 minutes of clock, you know, there wasn't any big, great burst run or anything like that, other than the one that put the game away was 9 yards. But they were in 2nd and 7 and 3rd and 3, and they were moving the football and grinding the clock. And they were doing it when the Colts knew that they wanted to do it. When the Colts knew the Texans wanted to run the football, on 3rd and 3 to close the game, this is just our good ones against your good ones, and we're going to beat you. And they were able to do that on that play that everybody just heard. That's the most encouraging thing to me, is that situationally they were able to move the football on the ground. Not just various times throughout the game. And by the way, Joe Mixon's long run of the day on this buck 59 was 13 yards. So it wasn't 159 yards. It was buoyed by a 65-yard run. Right. He was grinding 6, 8, 9, 5, 11, 13, 13. Like, it was a steady beating by Joe Mixon in the offensive line.
The one that I got excited about was when it was 2nd and 6 and Joe Mixon ran for 3 yards at the end of the drive, at the end of the game, because it was against a heavily loaded box. They were committed fully to stopping the run, and they ground out 3 yards, and they end up getting the first down on the next one. But that right there is the test. Can you run effectively? And that's not technically a win of a run, but compared to last year, and given in the full context of what they were able to do on the ground, it was great. Boy, one of the best plays of the game, in my mind, was a Joe Mixon run up the middle on an inside zone where Kenyon Green got out in space and absolutely threw Zaire Franklin out of the bar. It looked like an action movie, Sean, where somebody is falling off the hero lets the villain drop. It just shoves him off the skyscraper, and they show the scene of him flailing his arms.
That would be Die Hard.
I thought
it
was Die Hard.
Yeah, it
looked like there might as well have been a bad green screen behind it and everything. Zaire Franklin just lost in space, like George Clooney at the end of that space movie where he goes like flying off into the void. Yeah,
there you go.
It was beautiful. Gravity. Yeah. It was Zaire Franklin stars in Gravity.
Yeah. Hmm. Featuring Kenyon Green, yes.
Yeah, so Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green, much improved. And right. Kenyon Green especially. It looks like a different human being from 2 years ago. I haven't gone through and watched the All-22 yet or anything. There were blemishes, to be sure, on the offensive line. The pass protection was certainly not pristine. I mean, Laremy Tunsil, he looks rusty. He looks like his... Yeah. I don't know if maybe it was because they were wearing dark pants and white jerseys, but I felt like Laramie's legs looked a little bit skinny.
You think?
For coming back from his knee surgery and the way he looked out there at times, he didn't look like himself.
Yeah,
he had some really good snaps too. I talked a lot of smack on his behalf about going against Latu, and there were some rough snaps.
He did not back you up. Yeah, you were like Matt Damon speaking for Ed Norton in Rounders. Like, no. I'm good for this debt too, mobsters, Russian mobsters. Yeah. It's fine. And then you look up and Laremy Tunsil's hightailing it out of the state and you're left having to pay $15,000 to Russian mobsters. A lot of movie analogies early today. I like it. So that's the offensive side. We're going to dig deeper into this stuff as we roll on with the show here. Texans win yesterday, 29-27. How about the defense? Shutting down. I mean, I know there were 350-yard plays that all set up touchdowns, or at least directly could have been or were touchdowns. But I think the story defensively is they shut down Jonathan Taylor yesterday.
Right.
16 carries, 48 yards. They cut the head off the snake with Jonathan Taylor yesterday.
Yeah, you know what I was surprised by yesterday is a lot of people, even after the game, were livid, like genuinely angry that Anthony Richardson had so many yards on the ground. To be clear, look, Anthony Richardson had 56 yards rushing. He was the leading rusher on the day. Jonathan Taylor had 48 yards rushing. That's going to happen. Yeah. Richardson's going to get his yardage on the ground. That's who he is. Honestly, if Anthony Richardson had any semblance of consistency, he might end up being the best quarterback of all time, and if he could stay healthy. But he's so far from that yesterday was the full Anthony Richardson experience.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get yardage on the ground because he's a physical freak. He's like a bulky Cam Newton, but more athletic. It's crazy. The Texans linebackers did a really good job of handling the RPO game, being patient, staying in coverage until they knew for sure that it was passed. I'd credit D'Amico and Matt Burke with mixing things up defensively and how they handled the RPO, so they didn't give a consistent look for the Colts to really see. But, I mean, obviously the big thing is the big plays, the explosives. Jimmy Ward's got to stay over the top when he's supposed to stay over the top.
Yeah.
He's supposed to, well, and even the big long, freakishly good throw by Richardson, it looked like they were in quarters coverage. It's not over the top. It's just that Jimmy Ward couldn't run with Alec Pierce.
Right.
I mean, it's Alec Pierce. You're blaming Derek Stingley on that. The ball was caught two-thirds of the way across the field away from Derek Stingley. Jimmy Ward's got to be better in
better position. Where is safety supposed
to
be? Yeah. In that play, yeah. That's funny you say that about the Anthony Richardson experience. I'm looking, I do my notes that I post that have all kinds of curse words in them and stuff. Literally, the drive that ended with the Kalen Bullock – interception. I literally bracketed that on my notes, and I wrote Anthony Richardson experience in all caps, because on that drive, he had the 24-yard scramble for the first down. He had another third and two, might have been a read option or something. He ran for two first downs on third downs on that series, but he also missed a wide-open A.D. Mitchell over the top that would have been a walk-in touchdown, and then he threw an interception to Kalen Bullock that looked like might not have been his fault. Everybody was slipping on that turf
it was yesterday. That was the unfortunate thing about yesterday was it was just – and you know what? I'm not making excuses for anybody, but – it does contribute to the sloppiness. Yeah. Obviously, your routes and everything aren't going to be as precise. I did a live stream yesterday, and I was kind of I realized afterwards that I had barely mentioned Nico Collins, which is absurd. We're just guilty of the same thing.
Don't you worry. He gets the whole next segment to himself, buddy. Nico Collins was amazing yesterday.
The catch he made on the sideline. I mean,
to help close the game out there. The 3rd and 11.
Obviously the deep shot was the most impressive on the box score and everything, and impressive regardless. But the combination of C.J. Stroud throwing to those guys on the sideline and making catches that in real time look absolutely impossible that they were catches. Just absolutely no way in hell. And then there you go. And it wasn't even close. I mean, the question had nothing to do with whether his knee was in or anything. It was whether he possibly could have bobbled the ball at all.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even, and from the first angle, I thought that it could be. I think from the other angle, I was like, well, there's no way in hell it was enough to challenge.
To overturn it.
It looked like he had control the whole time.
Yep. Let's get to Nico, because the dynamic that existed with the Texans and the Colts for years was there was a nemesis that you knew was going to destroy you every single time, T.Y. Hilton. I'm glad that the Colts are getting a taste of their own medicine, and we're going to relive the magic of Nico Collins coming up in the next segment. We'll do that next here on a Victorious Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Big time playmaker, right? And he's done it a couple times here versus the Colts. So that's what Nico does. He makes big time plays in that. In the moment where we needed it most, like, what a play. What an awesome catch for him to get down and bounce. It was really big time play.
I hope D'Amico's voice is permanently stuck like that. I wanted to make a transition. He's obviously got a cold. He kind of jokingly, after his opening statement where I think he was, I can't even remember who he was talking about, he kind of like fake punched his own throat.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. He acknowledged that he's got a little bit of something going on right off the bat. Just stay away from everybody else, D'Amico. Don't make any physical contact with people.
If he
kind of transitioned into like an older dude with a raspy voice, I would kind of like that.
I think it was. Did he say he had something going on medically? Because he sounded fine when we did the Coach's Corner interview. I know he wasn't doing that literally before the game. He does it on Friday with Mark. This same thing happened to him in the preseason too. He lost his voice in a game.
It's probably just allergies or something. You know what happens to me? I get a little bit of post-nasal drip, and all of a sudden I'm out for a week.
Yeah.
What happened? Does Seth have something scary? No, he's got a little bit of a trickle, and it's completely destroyed the one thing that matters for him in his profession.
His voice.
Certainly not his brain. Right. It's his actual voice.
Voice greater than brain, yeah.
Yeah, so D'Amico was either shouting a lot, or maybe he's got a little bit of allergies or something.
Well, there was plenty to shout at. I mean, it wasn't a perfect game. We'll get into that, but we got to touch on Nico here. We didn't hit on Nico much in the open, and I had the same thing going on you did, Seth. As I'm writing down the storylines from the game, like, ooh, the run game. Oh, Nick Caserio's acquisitions. You know, like, Stephon Diggs had two touchdowns. We haven't even talked about Diggs yet. He had two touchdowns. You know, all this stuff, all the storylines. They shut down Jonathan Taylor. I get to, like, the third or fourth one. I'm like, I haven't even mentioned Nico yet. Nico.
I know.
He's incredible.
It's almost like he's become enough of a fixture. It's like mentioning the moon or something. Like, the moon is there or whatever. Yeah,
right.
It's always there, right? Except for, like, God takes it away for a couple nights a month. I don't know why. So I go to church extra to try to bring it back.
That's right.
That's how I know that my faith is real. That's how I am with Nico. He is the moon.
Yep.
So Nico, and honestly, that play when they're closing the game out to catch the ball on the sideline, there was just so much of the precision of C.J. Stroud and his receivers. And you look up, and it's funny because, I mean, even though the Colts did everything they could to take away the passing game, And there was nothing necessarily spectacular about that game. You look up and C.J. Stroud's one of only several quarterbacks in the league who had a passer rating over 100 yesterday.
Yeah.
115.9 passer rating.
Dude, we're watching the game up here, and this is well into the second half, and we were all looking at each other going, that's you know, the Texans is one of the points in the game, and they're up by 9. And we're like, you know, this isn't bad considering CJ's had like a B-minus game for, you know, so far or whatever, you know, like, because there were a couple times where, you know, there were a couple times he got fortunate. You know, the one where he's trying to throw it away and the guy intercepts it in the heel. I think it was Juju Brents.
Just his heel, yeah.
His heel hit the, I mean, that was lucky, a little lucky. But you're absolutely right. Like, you realize after the game, because CJ was 24 of 32 for 234 yards, no interceptions, threw the two short touchdowns to Diggs, passer rating of over 115. Like, you look at the box score, you go, this is a great day. And you watch it with your own eyes, and you go, this is a really good day. But you start to realize, we're going to get into Nico, but with CJ, you start to realize, like, he's not being held to the quarterback standard now. He's being held to the CJ standard. Like, he's the expectations for him, that this is like a normal, like, this is just an average game for CJ Stroud, you know?
And honestly, this was a really good game to have right off the bat, because you're going to face teams like this where the Colts look at, I'm guessing, their front seven is the strength of their defense, a little less certain about the back end. So they face a team like the Texans and they're going to say, all right, well, let's try to take care of the run with the guys up front, and we'll sit back and play coverage and try not to allow anything deep. So the challenge for a quarterback, especially one who's wired like C.J. Stroud, where you want to push the ball deep, the challenge is, all right, I'm just going to have to sit and dink and dunk and hand the ball off. And C.J. knows this intellectually, but it's a different thing to play it out in real time.
Sure.
You know, and really feel it and know what it's like. It's like being financially responsible with your investments during a recession. Like, you know what you're supposed to do.
Right.
You're not supposed to panic, but it's really, really hard to do
in
the moment.
My neighbor gave me this pamphlet, and this looks like a really good way to get my money back.
I'm going to get rid of all these super solid stocks that are down for the moment because I got to get out of this hole. So I think that was a good challenge for them to face. But then even in doing all that, It's exactly how you would have predicted it before the season. In any given game, you can't figure out which wide receiver is going to go off.
Yeah.
And yesterday it was Nico Collins, you know, with 6 receptions, but also just by virtue of the one huge play that gives him 117 yards. But Stephon Diggs has 6 receptions, but 2 touchdowns.
The 2 touchdowns.
And, you know, Tank Dell has 3 receptions, but also a very impressive run. It's going to be like that.
Yeah.
Next week, it might be Stephon Diggs. Next week, it might be Tank Dell that goes
100%. Off. 100%. In a game where C.J. Stroud had, I'll say, just 234 yards passing, because that's below his average, everybody that seemed to matter on that offense ate. You know, like, the three big receivers all did something to affect winning in that game. Nobody more than Nico Collins. So this is what I love about this Nico Collins thing, Seth. The last 2 regular season games the Texans have played, yesterday and Week 18, have both been at Lucas Oil Field, and Nico Collins has gone off in both of them. And I love that Colts fans are getting a dose of what we got with T.Y. Hilton for a decade, which was, damn, this guy is going to get $1.50 somehow or some way, it feels like, every single time. And if you recall, 2023, just to refresh everybody's memory, Week 18, must-have game for the Texans and the Colts. Nico went 9 catches, 195 yards, and a touchdown. And that was without Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell out on the field like yesterday was. That was Nico as the sole weapon out there, really. No Joe Mixon either in that game.
Yeah.
Like, it was Nico, and he had the big touchdown to open the game for 75 yards. He had the 29-yard catch and run late in the second quarter where he trucked the same guy twice at the end of it to set up a touchdown. He had the catch on 2nd and 14, where he just came out of nowhere, looked like CJ's throwing the ball away, came out of nowhere, clearly broke the spirit of the Colts, as we've heard on the Trenches podcast, that 2nd and 14. They hated that. So that was last season. Same thing this season, man. Like, Nico had plays where you're going, damn, like, there aren't many receivers that can make these kind of plays. Let's relive a little bit of the magic here. This was the one, you pointed it out, Seth. 55-yard catch. There are not many guys that go up and make this grab on a C.J. Stroud deep ball.
C.J. looking. C.J. guns long down the left side. Nico Collins down there, and he's got that catch inside the 15, down to the 12. double coverage, doesn't matter. Big play to Collins.
We knew we had to take a shot. You know, we started out kind of slow on offense, and, you know, so I feel like for us, man, we just had to make a play. And Seven, he trusted in me, and my guy was just run. And I ran, man, just licked the ball in the air to go make a play for the team, and that's what I did.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a great feeling, you know, just continue to build, work on me, and continue to make plays.
That was Nico was on the post game with us yesterday. So we
we
had him take us through each of the three catches that we're playing here. So we'll get a little director's cut. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah.
What'd you think of that one? What'd you think of that 55-yard one right there?
I was happy about that.
Yeah, me too.
I think that again, you know, it was one of those things. It was really well placed ball for where it ended up. I don't know exactly. You know, like the between the turf and whatever else going on, I think that CJ maybe lacked a little extra oomph but for where, if you're going to make a throw in a contested catch, that's where exactly it had to be for Nico to go up and get it. And we've seen this now. I mean, Nico is, he's T.Y. Hilton. It is, as T.Y. Hilton was to the Texans, now Nico Collins is to the Colts. There's something in him. Remember those runs last year? It was the run after the catch last year in the Colts games where you could see, oh, he wants to hurt people. He was hitting people. He could have gotten flagged for a late hit out of bounds as a wide receiver last year. Yeah, as the offensive player last year in the playoffs. Or excuse me, the play-in game.
Yeah.
And I think there is just that. There's 100%. I'm convinced of it. There's something about Nico versus the Colts. He just wants to take their souls.
He laughed. That was the first thing I led with the interview. I'm like, you kind of like that place, huh? And he just started cackling. So that was a 55-yard catch, set up a touchdown. This was a big one too. This was 3rd and 14, and this was the drive that ended with the Mixon touchdown to make it 22-13. CJ gets flushed out of the pocket. CJ goes running backwards, kind of Case Keenum style a little bit, then starts rolling out to his right. Turned out to be the right thing to do. And Nico just found a little soft spot, and CJ does one of those, no, 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 oh, okay, good throw kind of things right here.
Here's the snap. Does CJ have time? A bit. Now he's flushed out to the right. Stroud scrambling, looking for somebody to get open, throws back across his body, and he hits Nico Collins, who dives down to the 36-yard line. First down, just like last year.
We work on those type plays, you know, in practice. You know, you just never know. You know, play break down like it did, you know, just scrimmage drill, you know, just find an open hole, you know, with Seven. You know, got the ball in his hands, you know, amazing things happen. You know, so you saw him in the soft spot in the zone, you know, and had to move the sticks. You know, so that was a big play. You know, he trusted me and found the right spot in the zone, man, and made the play for the squad.
You know, watching the Friday night game, the Packers versus the Eagles, there were a couple times in that game, and I can't remember which quarterback it was, but Todd Blackledge was, you know, criticizing the quarterback for throwing over the middle late in the down. And I'm kind of like, all right, Todd, you sound a little old here, because there are a few quarterbacks in the league right now that are actually really good at that, and CJ Stroud is one of them. As a Texans fan, I sat there and I watched. I was like, maybe it's a bad decision if you're Jalen Hurts or what have you, but CJ did it twice yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, he did it to Tank Dell. He did it to Nico Collins, where he threw across his body. The one to Tank Dell was kind of like a no-look almost.
Yep.
Back over the middle, across his body, late in the down, he's just got a really good feel on the scramble drill with those guys. This is where all the off-season work and the communication really comes into play.
Yep.
Because he's done this multiple times. He's done it versus the Colts, especially multiple times.
We love that. All right, so that was a 3rd and 14 catch, set up the Joe Mixon touchdown. Last one, you've touched on it, Seth. This didn't literally clinch the game. Mixon's run that we heard in the open did, but this one kept the drive alive. The drive alive that ended up clinching the game. This is a 3rd and 11, just after a 3rd and 6, which Kenyon Green gets a false start, and now it's 3rd and 11. So it was 3rd and 6, Kenyon Green false start. Now it's 3rd and 11. The place is going bonkers. This place is going nuts. We're going to get the ball back, and we're going to go down and get a field goal and win this game. That's what all those yokels from Indianapolis thought was going to happen. C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins said, not on our watch.
Crowd deafening. Here's the snap. C.J. looking, firing right sideline, and Nico Collins with the catch. He gets the feet down for a first down at the 41-yard line.
Another bad spot, Mark.
The spot is tricky. It's right at the 40.
You got to look at this.
Which is exactly where they needed to get to, and they may measure this.
Well, they didn't measure it, but they did review it to see if Nico caught it. And Seth, as you pointed out before, the knee was obviously down. I was worried about the same thing you were. Were they going to get really, really technical with, was the ball moving? Did he have, because the ball touched the ground.
Yeah.
But Nico, they ruled correctly that he had control of it. Here's Nico afterwards. I asked him after the game when he was on with us in the post game, did you know right away as you were going to the ground that it was a catch?
It was a catch. I knew it was a catch. And I felt my knee and my toe. I knew I directed, you know, and I controlled it all the way down. You know, so I already knew it was a catch. You know, I didn't want to waste no time with the review. You know, so but they showed it on the big screen. I was like, yeah, I know it's a catch. So let's go.
Pointing at the
sometimes,
big screen.
Sometimes the actual participant in the play, as we know from baseball, is actually the worst judge of whether
yes,
it was or wasn't.
True.
You know, I don't know. I don't always trust. I trust that he's saying what he believes,
yeah.
But you never know for sure. That was great. I mean, we've just seen that so many times now. These throws and catches on the sideline between C.J. Stroud and either Nico Collins and Tank Dell that are just unbelievably precise. And they don't even necessarily make the highlight reels if people aren't going back and really watching and seeing how incredible they are. That was really good. Speaking of spots, it's so annoying. They got to change this rule. When the quarterback dives, they treat it like a slide.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know people wanted D'Amico to review that spot early in the game. That it's an annoying rule that they do for quarterback safety. They don't want quarterbacks diving forward. It makes sense, I guess, because you're trying to protect your most valuable asset, but it
yes.
really, really sucks when you see it play out.
I guess. Man, Vandy was great on that call, the 3rd and 11. I didn't notice it, but the first time where he just at the beginning, he goes, crowd is deafening. Like that, like that's, you could hear it like that. Just, that's a good job, man. Like just kind of setting, not just describing what you're seeing on the field, but like setting the stage for how it feels in the building there.
Yeah, know? I thought, who knows? Vandermeer, after those couple years of the Jack Easterby, Lovie Smith, Lovie was fine. He was a perfect. Lovie should have been hired instead of David Culley if he had to have a bridge coach. But I worried that maybe Vandermeer would get depressed and just ask somebody to put him out on an iceberg to drift off and die or something. He sounds rejuvenated.
He's better.
Sounds
than
like
that
now one, he man. Wants to kill every Viking in the village and take power and control for himself.
Yeah, he's better than ever, man. He's Vandy's on it. All right, headlines. We will obviously dig into the Texans here. Big day yesterday, man. First place Houston Texans in the AFC South 1 week in. Everybody else loses in the division, so that was good to see. We've not touched on the Astros yet. Overall, a good weekend, but boy, this Verlander thing, we got to talk about this. That was rough last night, and all kinds of stuff going on in the NFL. We'll get to all of it in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Here's the snap. Here's the toss to Mixon running right across the 50, 45. Tackled by Cross at the 41. Checkmate. That'll do it. The Texans will beat the Colts on opening day. Stroud takes the knee, and it is over. The Texans win on opening day, knocking off the Colts on the road. 29-27, 1-0. With the Bears up next on Sunday Night Football.
And for years, over a decade, the Texans could not win in Indianapolis. Now that's all they do, man. Last three times they've been up there, victorious up in Indy, including yesterday, 29-27, the final score. I think we got a taste of the big story yesterday, Seth, in that first call by Vandy we just heard.
Yeah.
Joe Mixon was that dude yesterday.
Ooh, man, and it was, you laid it out perfectly earlier in the show when you talk about the fact that his long run was how many yards yesterday, Sean?
13 yards.
It was just a steady churning.
Yeah.
It was great. When a team decides to take the top off the offense and just try to limit these wide receivers from doing too much damage, A, you still did some damage downfield, but B, can you run the ball? When the defense basically invites you to run the ball, that's like, you got to be able to do it. In the last 2 years, the Texans haven't been anywhere close to that. And I would include, even in the Bill O'Brien offenses, there were years where they had lots of rushing yardage, but they couldn't really run when they needed to run.
Right.
It's been a long time. I don't want to invoke the name Arian Foster, but It's been that long since it's felt like, all right, this team can flat out run the football. And I think they might end up being that team. And you credit, honestly, the offensive line is night and day in terms of how they understand zone running, how they were pat. There were some hiccups. You know, the one Grover Stewart tackle for a loss, that was just basically bad teamwork between Laramie Tunsil and Kenyon Green, but they didn't get physically beat. They just had a little bit of a miscue, and that'll get cleaned up. But Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green had some great, great snaps in that game, in the run game, that I don't think we would have seen last year, and certainly not the year before.
Yeah, it was great, man. They did it in that environment, too. Like, they did that. That wasn't at home where the crowd's quieting down. Like, they did it.
Right.
They did it in an environment that was raucous for most of that game.
Oh, okay. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but very quickly.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams did not look great yesterday,
right,
and he's going to come into NRG Stadium with a fully enclosed stadium, almost.
One panel still. Yes.
There might be 0.2 decibels seeping out the top, but other than that.
Decibel leakage. It's going to be decibel leakage.
Oh, man, the Bears broadcasters are going to be like, I don't know. I think they might be piping in noise.
Yeah.
Go die. Go die in advance. You die today before you can even utter that nonsense.
I love it. The Bears are 7 days out, and Seth already told their announced team to go die. You're on it.
I'm going to seek them out. I'm going to find them in the damn box. I'll heckle him.
Let's hear from D'Amico talking about this very thing, running the football and what it does for you.
Yeah, it opens everything up, right? When you can run the ball, it opens everything up. When it comes to the passing game, they got to put eight in the box, right? So now you have a lot of single coverage on the outside, and, you know, that's where Nico, Tank, Diggs, they can make their plays.
Yeah, it was pick your poison, man.
And going back to the Arian Foster days, you know, one thing Gary Kubiak would always stress is like, hey, just because you've got eight guys in the box it's not an excuse to not run the ball. And these days especially, sometimes a loaded box means seven in the box just because of the way personnel groupings have gone. But that's why at the end when they were closing it out, one of my favorite plays was a 3-yard run on second and six.
Yes.
Just because the box was immensely loaded. The Colts loaded up to stop the run, and the Texans still got positive yardage out of it. I thought the blocking was great for the most part, but then there were also plays in that game where I think last year or the year before, you might have said, well, there's penetration in the backfield, and that's why it was dead. Yeah, there's penetration in the backfield, but on zone runs, usually that means there's also a cutback lane somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Mixon found those cutback lanes when there was penetration into the backfield, and that was really sweet to see.
Yeah, it was nice to see, man. The whole game you're watching, you go, like, this is what I've been told. This is what I've been told about. This is how it's supposed to look. This running, it looked really good. Let's get to the Astros. Overall, not a bad weekend. They take 2 out of 3 from one of the hotter teams in baseball. The bats did come alive. They scored 8 runs, 11 runs, and 6 runs.
Yay, bats!
And yet, I feel like, yay, bats. And they're up by 4.5 games still. So the lead in the division is still comfortable. Seattle still stinks.
Did they come to life to the tune of overcoming an 8-0 deficit at one point?
The Astros?
The Astros, yeah.
Not last night, no.
Because that's what they needed, Sean.
They did
that's
need
what
that.
They needed, yeah.
Well, full disclosure, I saw almost none of this game last night.
Right, you were doing your post game. Verlander was a mess.
He was a mess. He was a mess.
Yeah, Verlander was an absolute mess.
Yeah, 3 innings pitched, 8 hits, 8 earned runs, didn't strike anybody out in the 3 innings, which is, you know, that's an issue. 75 pitches in 3 innings. Like, it was horrible. Here was Verlander just saying, not my night.
Felt good physically, but obviously the results were atrocious. guys hit a lot of good pitches, I thought.
Okay.
He's
got, I got to do the math as to how many games. They've got roughly like 28 games left, I think. Something. I think there's, I don't know, 71, 62. I forget what their record is. He's probably got 4 starts, 5 starts left to work his way into the rotation. He's out of the rotation right now for the postseason.
I'm going to tell you a scary stat, and yet there's 2 sides to this coin.
Okay.
The last time Verlander yielded 8 earned runs in 3 or fewer innings was May 16th, 2013.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's been a full decade. Now, the other side of the coin is, all right, yeah, and he ended up playing pretty well. You know, he's gone on to play for more than a decade.
Didn't ruin him, yeah.
Verlander has a history of figuring things out when he's having some hiccups and hit some rough stretches. The difference is that he's now an old man.
He's 41,
and,
yes.
And Verlite's the daylight's a burning, my friend. Yeah. I don't feel great about Verlander right now.
No, I don't. I hate it. See, you're right. I couldn't see it because we were finishing up the post game show when the game was starting, and I'm getting these push notifications. I'm like, damn it.
It wasn't like they were just, you know, hitting a bunch of great pitches or anything. But Espada tried to put a dress on it and call it pretty, but it was not.
I know. I can't even listen to that. I had it slotted. I don't even want to listen to Espada talk about this because I'm like, nah, you can't put lipstick on this one. Let's get to the NFL for a couple minutes here as we close out headlines. The rest of the AFC South lost. Blown leads were the story of the early games. Jacksonville blowing a 14-0 lead to the Miami Dolphins. Tennessee blowing a 17-0 lead to the Bears in a game where Caleb Williams didn't even hit 100 yards passing. Jonathan Owens had a block punt return for a touchdown, and Will Levis threw one of the most ridiculous pick sixes that you're ever going to see. And it was made even more ridiculous. He threw the ball from his knees, like shoveled it from his knees straight to a Bears defensive back who took it to the house. And while his Titans teammates are turning and trying to chase the guy, Will Levis is on his knees just with his hands on his helmet, not moving. Like, dude, get up and get involved.
This is where I get. I love being in the AFC South for this reason right now. We're at a nexus where I think, you know, the Texans are about to become very, very, very prominent. But you have these quarterbacks like Will Levis and Anthony Richardson that, for the most part, most of the people in the national media and other fan bases haven't actually watched all that much. Anthony Richardson just hasn't played all that much. But I still hear very smart people like that are bullish on Will Levis.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I'm like, you clearly have not watched him play at all, other than just maybe a smattering of plays. Anthony Richardson's the same way. That play, that throw yesterday he made off of 1 foot under pressure, just downfield, splitting the coverage. It was incredible.
Yeah.
But, man, you got to watch every snap and realize this dude, he's a magnificent home run hitter who bats 125.
Yes.
He needs to clean some stuff up. On any given Sunday, he's a nightmare to face.
Yeah.
It's scary as hell.
Yeah.
Scary as hell. But in terms of becoming an actually genuinely good NFL quarterback, he's that can actually, you know,
long way
have
away.
Awesome regular seasons and go to the playoffs. He's got a long ways to go.
Long way away. All right. We'll circle back to the Texans. Joe Mixon, we'll hear from Joe. Joe really likes his new friends. And also, if the Texans had lost this game, the A topic on this game would have shifted completely. We wouldn't even be talking about Mixon. The A topic would have been one of the most annoying A topics of all time. We'll touch on it briefly, and we'll do Acknowledge Me at 7:20. That's all coming up next.